The first 3 weeks of the 25-26 NBA season are complete, and while most teams have already played a total of 10 games up to this point in the year, as Denver's Nikola Jokic and Detroit's Cade Cunningham garner Player of the Week honors within their respective conferences after leading their teams to perfect records last week, there are no longer any unbeaten teams that remain, as we only stand a couple of weeks away from Thanksgiving. What's up, everybody, and welcome into yet another edition of the New 24, episode number 38 for all of our devoted audience members keeping track of things from the cities and towns you have the pleasure to listen to us from, as we appreciate your support. I'm your host, Gabriel Wilkins, and as always, I'm back beside my man and co-host, Torrence Stagger, to talk on all things NBA. What's happening?
Hey, man, everything's good. November 10th, 2025. Might be a nice legendary day in NBA history, man. A lot of great games. But last year, November 13th, 2024, this podcast started. This week, I'll make it 1 year. 52 weeks in a row, we brought you something. We're going to go another 52. So I appreciate all of y'all that's been out supporting us. This is something that's been many years in the making. You want to speak to us, reach us at tntfpod@gmail.com or on social media at tntf_. It's been great, man, and let's keep it going.
Yes, full circle moment for damn sure. It's kind of crazy to think about how fast time flies, let alone a year. It doesn't even feel like we've been doing it for a year, but it's definitely been a blessing. It's going to be many more episodes to come, no doubt about that. You can also find all our episodes and series, such as Faces of the League, on the podcast platforms you use to listen to your favorite podcasts, or by subscribing directly to our feed at rss.com/podcast/TNTF to ensure you're the first to listen as soon as a new episode drops. But for now, let's get right into it here on the New 24, starting off with a specific topic regarding several star players and their current situations within each organization. There's been nonstop chatter from national media members and critics alike regarding maturity issues, whether or not these guys may need to have their roles reconfigured in the quest to help their respective teams, or a possible change of scenery in the immediate future. Some of it is so crazy to the point where I feel as though we might be one of the few outlets that can actually address the following matters at the moment.
Yeah, let's start with Ja Morant. Ja Morant. That name rings very loud in the NBA community. And probably since the beginning of the season, not many days have gone by without a Ja Morant quote, a Ja Morant highlight. We got a lot of people speculating on if his days in Memphis are numbered. Me, I'm one of those who feels like, what are we doing? What are we really saying? Why do we want this? Why are we pushing for this? This is Ja Morant. Exciting, highlights, confidence. Someone who prides himself on being himself, not code switching, not switching up who he is, changing his lifestyle just because of the notoriety that comes along with being Ja Morant. He's carried that franchise on his back since 2019. Now, for the duration of his career, Taylor Jenkins has been his head coach. He has a new coach this season, and they don't seem to be getting along.
Yeah, him and Twama Cicelo, they definitely haven't been able to get on the same page through their first year together in Memphis, as Morant's let it be known to the press that him and his new head coach aren't seeing eye to eye after a rough loss at home against the Lakers a couple weeks back that culminated in a one-game suspension. I think a lot of this has to do with Cicelo's substitution patterns that not only Morant feels a way about, but also other key players on the team, such as all-star forward Jaren Jackson Jr. The one thing that the media, I think, tends to miss when they assess this situation is that this don't have anything to do with non-basketball related matters. You got a lot of people out here saying, well, maybe Ja Morant doesn't take heed to European coaching well. I don't think that has much to do with it at all. This is a guy that is averaging career low marks in minutes, and not only averaging career low marks in minutes per game, but also is seeing a reduction in his usage rate, which in turn, in my opinion, has impacted not only the numbers that you see him shooting from the floor, but also from three-point land. And some people are saying, well, he's taking pages out of the Jimmy Butler playbook. I don't see that at all. You don't hear any quotes about Ja Morant wanting out of Memphis. All Ja Morant has done is express loyalty to Memphis and wanting to be in Memphis. Now, Could he have handled that situation better? Sure. But the one thing people have to keep in mind, like we talked about in episode 7 of our 8-part Face of the League series this summer, Ja Morant is still growing. He's still maturing, still learning, trying to figure things out. And he also happens to play and reside in a market where the odds of winning a championship, even when your organization does right by you or puts pieces intact beside you to win, the odds are not that high, being in that small of a market and not having that type of money to play with in a manner that you see these big market clubs such as Los Angeles, New York, among a host of others like Boston, are able to do. So I think a lot of this is much ado about nothing. And while Ja Morant's comments may have amplified the situation, there are many other players on that ball club who feel the same way. Like I said, Jaren Jackson Jr. is one. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is another. And these are veteran players who, just like Ja, have also seen their numbers crater under Tuomas Iisalo, who is running a hockey-style substitution pattern that just isn't working. And in turn, you're seeing Memphis in certain games blow big-time double-digit leads, and they're not able to recover in time enough. And before you know it, you see them currently residing in the standings where they are, which is 3 games below 500.
Nothing's worse than a coach who just has to prove his genius. Nothing's worse. This is someone who was an assistant under Taylor Jenkins last year. I'm not sure if he was there because of Taylor Jenkins or if this was a call made from up top. I would lean towards the latter, seeing that he steps in and is the head coach. Now, last year, there were adjustments made that I guess Ja Morant wasn't comfortable with within the offense. Maybe we're starting to see exactly where that was coming from because it's continued into this season and Taylor Jenkins is no longer there. My thing is, as an organization, why is there such a disconnect between what you want and what your star player wants? Ja Morant is reported to have wanted a coach or expected them to hire a coach like a Mike Malone or Mike Brown, someone who was a veteran NBA coach, maybe someone with championship experience. Because no one said that Taylor Jenkins wasn't a good coach. X and O's, substitutions. You can criticize a lot of things, but sometimes you need someone in with more experience. They went in the other direction. Now you got somebody who's trying a science project out. You don't even understand the NBA game completely enough to try to reinvent it. See, the best guys at making adjustments and creating new styles, Greg Popovich, Eric Spoelstra, or guys who stick to the script like a Phil Jackson, they know the NBA game inside and out. It's not just a basketball game, it's an NBA game. It's not just basketball. For you to have the arrogance this coach appears to have, it's concerning to me from the outside because I'm like, where is this coming from? The executive are in the Grizzlies, are they siding with this coach over Ja Morant? Is this where these stories are coming from? These trade rumors? Because someone has to put it out there.
I think a lot of it is coming from the fact that, for one, the media knows when they create these narratives, it's other under rumblings beside it or behind it. One of those rumblings is that it's been reports that the Grizzlies could be a team that many around the league view as a possible relocation team, going from Memphis to Nashville. And what better way to kickstart that than to ignite these rumors even further? Because truth be told, you've had reporters trying to pry Ja Morant out of Memphis for the last 6 months to a year. And now they're putting it in the overdrive. You see people like Bill Simmons putting together trades that, in my opinion, will make no fucking sense for Memphis to do. I'm just going to be honest about the situation. I respect what Bill Simmons does, but like trading away Ja Morant to the Miami Heat to get Tyler Hero back, it's not really doing much for the Memphis Grizzlies long term, in my opinion. I think Tuomas Iisalo, the reason why he has the level of arrogance that he does is due to his track record. But what people have to understand is this: most of his success comes within the European stratosphere of the game. And like Torrence said, this is the NBA game and it's a difference. And this is also a players' league. And we talked about this when discussing the Grizzlies several weeks back prior to the start of the season about how the most important thing you could do as a head coach is find a way to keep your star happy. And one of the things that was supposed to happen or take place was him putting the ball back in Ja Morant's hands in a pick and roll heavy system, something in which Taylor Jenkins and his assistant coach at the time, Noah LaRoche, went away from. And as a result, they're no longer there. Morant's usage rate initially jumped under Isolo towards the last several games of last season, including in the playoffs. But ever since, they've went away from that for whatever reason, and it's just not working. Thomas Isolo has to understand that in order to be successful, you got to make adjustments too, because we are always quick to blame players when assessing why certain things aren't working, when in reality, sometimes you also got to look at the coach as well, because both sides could be at fault. When it comes to this situation, I'm with Ja Morant wholeheartedly, especially when there are other members of the team who feel this way. They just may not have the ability to speak out on it outwardly the way that Ja Morant does, or they may not be as willing to do it.
I'm going to go back to a point you mentioned earlier, the relocation thing. It all kind of started towards the beginning of summer, right before Stephen A. Smith just dissing the city of Memphis pretty much. Nobody wants to be there. They don't have the hotel, or it's very dangerous there. It's one of the best fan bases in the league. It's one of the more affordable tickets in the league. Memphis is historical. I'm a music lover. It's the home of 3-6 Mafia, Yo Gotti, Young Dolph, Project Pat, but it's also the home of Isaac Hayes, Stax Records, blues, hip hop, trap, soul. This city has history. This is Memphis. You see the pyramid there. It's the home of kings, and I'm not talking about Elvis. The city got a certain attitude. They embraced Zach Randolph, Tony Allen. It was almost natural for Ja Morant to be there because of that foundation being laid for the support that fan base showed those players I just mentioned. And that's not even to mention Mark Gasol, who went to high school in Memphis. Ja Morant and his family quickly been embraced by that city. And yeah, they've had some up and downs, off the court incidents, reports, but that city kept it in house, because that city treats him as one of their own. But Nashville isn't like Memphis. And that's where most of the reports are leaning to when you talk about relocating the Memphis Grizzlies. Ja Morant doesn't fit the image of Nashville. Ja Morant is Memphis, Tennessee. See, when people want to move things, gentrify things, they play the long game. It's never immediate. It's small bits and pieces moved. All I'm saying is, you don't get franchise players every day. You got to pick a time to stick by them through the hard times. You ask players to wait on you, to rebuild the roster around them. Whatever Ja Morant is going through maturity-wise, basketball-wise, the Memphis Grizzlies need to stick by them. Steph Curry got the opportunity to go from Oakland to San Francisco. So whether this team stays in Memphis or moves, Ja Morant needs to be there.
No, I agree with you 100%. And I'll stake my claim on the relocation shit now. If it's one team down south that you want to move that's been linked to relocation rumors as of recent times, I could kind of understand that, even though I believe they have a great fan base there. But this ain't the one. This ain't the franchise to relocate, in my opinion. Memphis has a great fan base, and they take a lot of shit, unwarranted. And I don't think they deserve it one bit at all. We've seen this team go on playoff runs on several occasions, including a conference final run just 12 seasons ago with three of the guys that you mentioned, including Mike Conley with Zach Randolph and Tony Allen and Mark Gasol. We've seen this franchise have success. But even in spite of that success that they had, I think even they would agree if I said Ja Morant is arguably one of the greatest players, if not the greatest player in the history of this franchise, dating all the way back to the mid-90s when they started in Vancouver. So regardless of what happens in the future, yes, Ja Morant should be a part of it. And for so many media members and analysts to talk about how much superstars don't grow on trees, right? To want to move this guy and say that he needs a change of scenery when he's proven that he can win here, even though he has yet to get to a conference finals appearance or an NBA finals appearance. I find that quite remarkable, especially considering all of the recent events to surface around the league, which we'll get into in just a bit. But I'm at a loss for words with it because they know what they're doing. And like you said, this is something that started long before what's recently unfolded with Ja Morant going all the way back to this summer. And you have people in Memphis, such as iconic sportscaster Doc Holliday, talking about it extensively on social media and having to dispel a lot of narratives that the national media has about Memphis from a local Memphian's perspective.
Hey, man, I'm gonna put the tinfoil hat on real quick. They building data centers there. It's gonna be a lot of money and a lot of new faces there. So somebody gotta go. But moving on to another quote unquote controversial figure, if you let the national media tell you, LaMelo Ball of the Charlotte Hornets. Now, the 24-year-old All-Star went down again recently with the right ankle, something he's been dealing with pretty much his entire NBA career. Now, I think we all know how talented LaMelo Ball is. You don't find 6'8 point guards with the complete offensive package that he has, at least statistically, points, rebounds, assists. But you still got national media members, I guess some scouts, and even executives, and maybe a few coaches who feel like this guy who made it to the NBA, third overall pick, played in Europe, played in Australia, doesn't take the game serious enough and doesn't have a style conducive to winning. This brings me back to what I just said about Ja Morant. When do we stick by our franchise players? I bring up Steph Curry again, someone who dealt with ankle problems in the beginning of his career, who wasn't an all-star as fast as LaMelo Ball has become an all-star early in his career. Imagine the NBA if Steph Curry got traded because his ankles, or because he liked to jack up threes, he didn't play a style of basketball that could lead to winning, because shooting threes wasn't the key to winning when Steph Curry came into the league in 09. And why can't we just enjoy basketball and enjoy watching somebody play basketball? I know we get on here and we talk about having championship standards for our favorite teams, but every team ain't my favorite team. Sometimes I just like to watch a guy put on a show. And LaMelo Ball is one of the few guys in the league who doesn't have the AAU trainer style game. Somebody who game to game is like a cool jazz player. He might do a different move that he may not even be able to replicate the next night, but it may happen. I appreciate seeing him on the fast break with Miles Bridges. At what point do you all turn the camera and look to the top and say, why haven't the Charlotte Hornets put together a serious team around LaMelo Ball? What's stopping that from happening? Because since we started this podcast, we've been trying to sense when the Hornets could take that next step. LaMelo Ball is not the only person that's injured on his team. Brandon Miller, a guy you guys tried to put over LaMelo Ball after his rookie year. Like, oh, well, maybe they could trade LaMelo because they got Brandon Miller. Well, he's been out just as much as LaMelo now. So what then? What's next? Because the Hornets, Michael Jordan era, didn't do great in the draft. LaMelo Ball, you hit on him. Brandon Miller, you hit on him. Outside of that, still a pretty shaky draft track record. Why is all the blame placed on this young man? I asked that question to not only Gabe, but those listening.
Well, we know LaMelo gets a lot of flack, for one, because his father, who many people consider and view as a boisterous personality, some have viewed him as arrogant, sometimes too much for his own good. He was proven right. That's basically what it was. He was proven right. He said, out of all my sons, LaMelo is the one. He anointed the young man before he even stepped foot in the NBA. And that offended a lot of people. The fact that this young man had his own gym shoe before he reached the NBA pissed off a lot of people, dating back to his days with the Big Baller brand. LaMelo Ball, in a lot of ways, was kind of like the basketball version of Michael Jackson from the way he was advertised and sold to us by his father at a young age. Now, does he still have to live up to that? Yeah, of course. But when healthy, like Torrance has said, we've seen his impact on a nightly basis. So anytime I see where people are saying, well, he doesn't take the game serious enough and that his style of play makes it hard to build a winning roster beside him, I think that's a bunch of bullshit. And the reason why I think that's bullshit is because I've heard that narrative placed on many of guys when I knew it wasn't true. And I've seen it proven untrue rather quickly when you pair them beside quality talent. One of those guys is Devin Booker, who happens to share the same number as LaMelo Ball, ironically enough. He's dealt with that. During the early days of his career, he shunned his critics once he was able to team up beside Chris Paul down in the desert. And they went on a run toward the NBA Finals, trying to work his way back to that point. He has an uphill battle, but he's still chasing it. And I give him credit for that. I think what the media is missing when it comes to assessing LaMelo Ball's situation is they're just not getting a team together beside him. You have guys like Con Knipple playing impressive basketball as of late. You have Ron Kalkbrenner, another rookie that's managed to shine. Overall, when I look at the situation, it's out of resentment that they have towards his father. And I think it's a lazy take when I hear former basketball players turn pundits saying that, well, in order for LaMelo to win, he needs a big market stage in order to shine. No, he just needs an organization that could build it out the right way. I think that there are pieces in Charlotte right now where they can make some noise. But this is the thing. They have to also learn how to play together. They have to be on the floor in order to do that consistently. LaMelo Ball has not been on the floor consistently alongside of Brandon Miller, but that's due to injury. It's not due to any outside bullshit on a level in which a lot of these national media members like to make it out to be. So if I'm a Charlotte Hornet fan or someone that's a follower of the team, I just want to see what this group can look like when fully healthy, because maybe you might have something, but you're also going to have to go through some growing pains as well, because this is a young team and that comes with it. And like LeBron James said after his first game, when he was a member of the Miami Heat and they lost to the Boston Celtics, Rome wasn't built in a day. And I think in this era that is inundated with a lot of hot takes and so forth, we lose sight of that shit.
Look, at the end of the day, LaMelo, the Hornets, Big Baller Brand, Puma, whoever, they need to call Steph Curry, call whoever, and, like, figure out the ankle situation he's dealing with. All of this is irrelevant until they figure out what's wrong with his ankles. We get that figured out, I have no doubt that he could at least turn the Hornets into a playoff team. I'm not putting championship expectations on a team that's never sniffed the championship.
Or conference finals.
But to see LaMelo Ball in the playoffs every year, that'd be great. I mean, why wouldn't I want LaMelo competing against Cade Cunningham, Tyrese Maxey, Tyrese Halliburton, Trae Young? We having a resurgence of the point guard in the Eastern Conference, and I would love for him to be a part of that. So, once again, let's just stick by our franchise players, because people are zigzagging for stories that don't have to be. This is not the 2010s anymore. The free agency bubble is over with. You got the Luka trade. Relax. Now, speaking of the Luka Doncic trade, Nico Harrison was finally fired by the Dallas Mavericks. I think we all saw this coming the day the notifications came across our phones. My first thoughts, like many others, that Nico's the fall guy. We talked about this on our very first episode of Second Chance Points right after the trade happened. We both looked at it from a 50-50 point of view. One, you don't trade a Luka Doncic. So let's get that off the table now. As I just said, stick by your franchise players at all costs. But also, it's a high risk, but maybe Nico's on to something. Many people spent this offseason calling this the best front court in the NBA, praised Cooper Flagg, whether the NBA forced the number one pick to Dallas. Hey, luck is luck. It happened for him. You all love Cooper Flagg. You all were anticipating the return of Kyrie Irving, and you all pretended like you didn't see Klay Thompson play basketball the last 2 or 3 years before the season started. I like Max Christie, people like P.J. Washington, Derek Lively. This was a lot of teams' sleeper pick in the Western Conference. So I feel like it's very disingenuous for everybody to turn him back into the guy that just traded Luka, because I thought we all had moved past that point. But obviously, someone can't get past it. And that's the owner, what's his name, Patrick Dumont, the Dallas Mavericks. Correct. He's the front face of the Mavericks now. I'm assuming this decision came after, coincidentally, he's seen talking to a kid in a Luka Doncic jersey, just as Cooper Flagg probably had his best game as a pro in the league. Just all very coincidental.
Yeah, you talk about Nico Harrison being ousted as general manager of the Dallas Mavericks. Assistant general managers Michael Finley and Matt Riccardi have been promoted to lead the Mavs basketball operations department on an interim basis. Of course, this move comes as no surprise to us, but it definitely seems like a PR move to save face for Patrick Dumont, a guy that is a relatively new owner in the league, as he's only held majority ownership of the Mavericks, if I'm not mistaken, for the last season and a half up until this point, and clearly was the man that had to sign off on this trade. And that's the thing that gets disregarded by the national annals of the media. They're very quick to attack Nico Harrison, but in my opinion, prior to this trade, I think most people across the country, including in Dallas, would have been quick to champion Nico or view him as a top five general manager in all of the NBA for some of the moves that he was making. He guided Dallas to a couple of Western Conference Finals appearances, one year in which they happened to win the Western Conference in 2024 after knocking off the top seeded Thunder and falling to the Boston Celtics in five games of the NBA Finals. I look at the situation and I say to myself, yeah, of course, I didn't agree with the move to trade Luka Doncic, but I also was someone that tried to see Nico Harrison's vision all the way through. I also was curious to assess his team when fully healthy and see just how far that they could go as a group, because I was of the belief that this team had at least a 2 to 3 year window to potentially compete for an NBA championship. Now, in the immediate aftermath of this news, I'm wondering, what is Patrick Dumont gonna do? Because if he gets his hands on this thing, there is no telling where this can go. And Dallas Mavericks fans, some of them may be rejoicing right now, but if I was someone that was a follower of the Dallas Mavericks, no matter where I was in any part of the country or the world listening to this pod, I would really be seriously wondering, who is Patrick Dumont? And I would want to know any and everything that I could about him.
Patrick Dumont is a new NBA owner. And if you know anything about new NBA owners, they do dumb shit. So, yes, that's what we should all be getting ready for. Also, be ready to see this guy in public speaking more, sharing his ideas, because nothing an NBA owner loves more in the beginning of being an owner and letting everybody know, I'm smart, I'm successful, I win at life, and I'm going to win in here too. See Matt Ishbia. Fire Nico, chants continue. Luka's playing great. Luka's not fat anymore. But as you mentioned, the Dallas Mavericks haven't been healthy this season. We came into the season knowing this. No Kyrie Irving. We know that Anthony Davis is going to be up and down. But as you said, there's a 2 or 3 year window that this team clearly had outlined. When you look at the payroll, you look at the contracts. So for Nico Harrison to be such a bad GM, according to the fans in the world, let's look at it right now. You have Cooper Flagg. You have Derek Lively. You have Max Christie. I would say that that's a pretty solid young core to have. You don't have your picks in 27, 28, and 29, but you have Anthony Davis on essentially a 2 year deal. You have Kyrie Irving on essentially a 2 year deal. And you got Klay Thompson on a 2 year deal. I think you can come up with a few first round picks for those guys in a trade. I believe Nico Harrison could have got those deals done. They don't have any bad contracts on their books. So what's really the problem? As you said, PR, at some point they'll get over it. They keep showing up to the games. Whether that's to boo him or not, they're at the games. Cooper Flagg is there. I don't know what the next move this team makes. When you speak about Klay Thompson, I told you over the weekend when we kind of figured this was coming, I said, well, there's a team that obviously Klay Thompson should go to, but I mean, they can't do that.
Right.
And that's Klay Thompson to go play on the LA Lakers because he came to Dallas to play with Luka Doncic. We know LeBron's been wanting him for years, and we know the whole connection to the Lakers with his father. But I mean, you're not going to let Nico Harrison trade Klay Thompson to the Lakers. If you're the new GM coming in, okay, you get Cooper Flagg and you got that young core I mentioned, but now you got to trade Anthony Davis, and you can't trade Anthony Davis to the Kings. Because Anthony Davis and Clutch not going for that. So you got to trade Anthony Davis somewhere he wants to go, which means you're probably not going to get the best deal. Same with Kyrie Irving. So once again, let's just all watch this new owner, as Gabe mentioned. Who is he? I think we're all going to find out.
And to add to your point, like I was having a conversation with Eamon Castles of the Castles Cast prior to us recording this, and he made an interesting point when we were chatting about this back and forth on Twitter. I wonder what the perception would have been if this was a James Dolan owned or ran team, because it's certain owners that we are quick to attack. And I'm not going to say that some of them don't deserve it, but Patrick Dumont got a lot of grace, a lot of grace in this situation. You see him starting to talk more, writing open letters to Mavs fans following the news of ousting Nico Harrison. But like you said, what was really the motive? And either way, you were going to deal with a ton of bad PR to begin with. But in my opinion, I truly believe that it came down to this. They got off to a bad start. And even though they knew coming into the year that Kyrie Irving wasn't going to be there and that Anthony Davis was going to have some ups and downs, like you said, they saw what number 77 was doing in Los Angeles without LeBron James and several other key cast members who now sit within the top four of the Western Conference standings. They saw that. And as a result, they wanted to pull the trigger early and call themselves getting ahead of things, which is weird and strange considering the fact that AD is on the mend and is supposed to be back soon. And like we said, you've been down AD, Kyrie, but oh, by the way, Cooper Flagg is starting to turn the corner. So it's all interesting in Dallas, and I'm waiting on them to do some dumb shit too. I really am, because it's too obvious to see where this is going if you're someone that keeps up with it the way that we do.
Well, we know that the next move, for sure, now that I thought about it, oh, they're going to fire Jason Kidd. That's obviously going to be the next move that's going to be made at some point. So, speaking of Jason Kidd, someone who he was instrumental in helping in the beginning of his career, Giannis, leading scorer in the NBA right now, Milwaukee Bucks off to a 7-4 start through their first 11 games. He averaging 34, 12 on 63% shooting, just crazy numbers night after night. And yet, we still have people putting together mock trades to the Spurs, to the Knicks, to the Rockets, and whatever else they could do, and whoever else's jersey they could Photoshop onto him. I don't understand it. He's playing great. The Bucks made the upgrade at center. They went from Brook Lopez to Miles Turner, which is paying off greatly. I think has a lot to do with Giannis's numbers. He got that five to protect them again. They have a much improved bench. They're hitting the three-point shot. Eastern Conference is wide open. Why are we still doing this? Giannis hasn't said that he wants to leave the Bucks yet. He's just been very smart and diplomatic about threatening the Bucks. Hey, I only got a couple years left. I don't know. I like New York City. I miss my family sometimes. I think my wife moved. Can you bring my brother in? Oh, my wife and kids didn't move. They're home. They just went to our summer house in Greece. Oh, okay. Yeah, Giannis is going to find ways to keep putting pressure on the Milwaukee Bucks. And to their credit, they've come through time and time again. They brought in Drew Holiday. It led to a championship. They brought in Damian Lillard. It didn't lead to an NBA championship. They got the NBA Cup, but a lot of injuries happened. First round exits. Wasn't the most pleasant time, but stick by your franchise player at all costs. And they've done a great job at that. They brought in Doc Rivers. They made the changes to the roster I just mentioned. I think they need to let this play out. I don't see any reason for them to even contemplate moving him. If anything, I'll tell Giannis right now, we're not going to do it. But we will try to win the championship. And I can't say that the Bucks haven't tried to do that. So shout out to them.
Yeah, a lot of the Giannis chatter in regards to trade rumors at this point is not warranted. I think he's flexed his muscle in a manner akin to the way any superstar would in his situation when they have that right and they've earned that right. And I do give John Horst and his front office staff a lot of credit for trying to do all within their power to keep their superstar happy. And this is something that a lot of small market franchises can learn a lot from when looking at the Milwaukee Bucks right now, who, as you said, they have a 7-4 record, and they entered the week sitting within the top six of the Eastern Conference standings. I think a lot of the Giannis chatter is much ado about nothing. And when he's playing the way that he is beside this group that is included some guys that have been outcasted in previous destinations, playing with something to prove now, you got to watch out for a team like this. Now, yeah, are they a legitimate contender? That's TBD right now. I don't think anybody's going to go out on a limb and say that right away. However, they do have the best player in the conference. And that's something that I think is oftentimes overlooked by the national media as well. Because you will hear some of them say, well, oh, it's Donovan Mitchell. Oh, it's Jalen Brunson.
Or you saying it's Cade Cunningham.
No, I haven't said that one. I'm not that crazy. I'm not saying that one. I think he's cemented himself as one of the best guards in the East, though, bar none. But all in all, Giannis Antetokounmpo is damn sure the best player in the Eastern Conference. Make no question about that.
And him being the best player in the Eastern Conference and the Bucks continuing to stick by him, you may land in a good spot. Patience pays off. You got a team like the Sacramento Kings putting it out there. Yeah, we about to start over. So Sabonis, DeRozan, you guys on the trading block. And somebody that could definitely help the Milwaukee Bucks and a lot of other teams, Zach LaVine. So you may be in a position to get a guy like Zach LaVine at the deadline now. You put Zach LaVine with the way he's been playing this season with Giannis and Miles Turner, you got to watch out. Even if you're a team in the Western Conference, that may be a lot to compete against in a seven-game series, especially depending on health. So right now, Giannis, the Bucks, everything's moving forward. Everything's in good shape, I would say. I'm looking for them to be on the offensive when it comes to trade talks.
Oh, as they should be. I don't expect anything different as well on that front, especially when you look at the way that their offense is performing, their eighth in offensive rating. And when you look at Giannis, he's registering the highest offensive rebounding percentage of his career. He's been the main culprits or reasons behind a lot of their success. So I can't wait to see what unfolds out in Ill Mill the rest of the way.
And speaking of guys who play to their leverage, play the strong hand, never the weak hand. Number 23 entering the 23rd year in the league, the all-time leading scorer, LeBron James, the guy with the sciatica nerve pinch, allegedly. Man, you guys out there have been just sounding absolutely crazy with the LeBron James takes. Okay, yeah, LeBron, whoever put the thing out there, maybe he wants to sit back and watch the Lakers, see how they play before he comes back. Maybe he wants the Lakers to fail because he didn't get his extension to prove his value. Maybe the Lakers want him out the way so they can see what they got with Luka on his own. Whatever the angle you want to take with it. Y'all out here talking about bringing LeBron James off the bench now? That's what we doing? Or that LeBron James needs to take a seat, not to Luka Doncic. That's Luka. That's one thing. Now y'all telling me Austin Reeves? Austin Reeves, who almost got played off the floor during the postseason last year? Because a white guy with a headband did a few crossovers and some layups and had a triple-double, 50 points, whatever he did. Now, I get Bron 41 years old, but physically, he's still in some of the best shape in the league. He might not be able to dunk over you anymore, but he can still run over you. He can still outthink you. If he's in transition and it's you and him, you're probably going to get out the way. I've seen him set screens for Dwayne Wade, dive to the rim, catch it, and make the decision to kick it out to Shane Battier, throw a lob to Chris Bosh. I've seen him hit catch and shoot threes. Oh, man, and let's not forget the infamous play with him and Kyrie. You set them up on opposing wings. You send Kyrie a pick. He drives to the rim. The defense collapses towards Kyrie. LeBron sprints, and now he's led to a lob or a dunk. Y'all think that won't work with Luka Doncic? For what? What is this based on? LeBron just averaged like 25, 8, and 8 again on near 40% three-point shooter. I mean, he's 41, but if I gave you those stats just in a vacuum, you'd want that player on your team. And it would take a lot for someone to be a number one option over that guy, which Luka doing. I mean, he's putting up 40-point triple-doubles. You criticize Anthony Davis because he wasn't good enough to be the number one option over LeBron. And now you're ready to criticize LeBron because he finally has the number one option to come second to, and now you want him to go from second to third to off the bench. Why? All right, what's wrong with y'all out there? Bron, Steph, and KD been carrying this league a long time, and they still performing at a high level. Like, let's stop the BS. Like, even ignore LeBron and his people if they put out the rumors about, oh, I want to go to the Warriors, if that's him or whoever it is. Just ignore it.
Got to at this point. You have to. It's no way around it. I think it's definitely getting out of hand. You've had people saying, well, he needs to take a pay cut. LeBron took pay cuts to win in Miami, too, just as much as he showed that he could play off the ball alongside of the guys that you name and mention. He also played off the ball when Luka first got there. You saw him making plays, cutting to the rim. He's been looking for a player of Luka Doncic's caliber for a long time where he can play off the ball a lot more. Yes, LeBron has been a ball-dominant player for the majority of his career, but that doesn't take away from his ability to be able to play off of the ball either. And I think that's something that gets overlooked a ton. And to hear a lot of former NBA players saying this shit of all people, I don't know what lens they're watching the game through. And I don't question resumes. I don't question resumes. I'm not going to question Paul Pierce's resume as a hooper. I'm not going to question Theo Pinson's resume as a hooper, regardless if their career went two different ways. I'm not going to do that. But to sit up here and say or ask him of all players to be willing to come off the bench when at the age of 40 a season ago, you can make a case that he was their best defensive player on the floor. He was the player in the best shape on the floor as well for the Lakers. And he was still moving, calling out sets and whatnot. He is the reason, in my opinion, why you seeing Luka have the season that he's having. You don't think that having a guy like LeBron to lean on, even when he's not on the floor, isn't beneficial to him? That's very beneficial to any player, especially a superstar player of Luka Doncic's caliber.
Or from the standpoint of, hey, Luka, you got to get in shape. The actual
Right.
standard of being in shape is right there across the locker room. He's right there. Yeah, and Paul Pierce, Theo, I mean, look, Paul Pierce be drunk, allegedly. I mean, so I'm not going to question his resume, but I am going to question his choice of drink. You know what I'm saying? Look like a dark liquor type of guy. He need to calm all that down. Theo, I don't know. Not gonna talk about podcast on podcast, but that's where some of that stuff came from. But it's been kind of coming from everywhere. I get
It
it.
has.
I get it. The season been great. The numbers are up. Everything's going great. And we waiting on this one piece to complete the chessboard. We even already seen Michael Jordan. So it's only one person that ain't stepped into this thing, and it's Bron. But when he gets here, he's gonna be Bron until further notice. I know everybody's trying to rush to figure out what day he's gonna fall off the old proverbial cliff. But let's just let it happen. We don't have to rush to get there. Let him miss a couple open dunks in transition first before we all can be like, all right, bro, sit it down.
And you know what? To add to your point, as we wrap up this conversation on these stars and their respective situations, you don't always got to be right either. You don't always have to be right. It's okay to be wrong sometimes. Even we're wrong sometimes. A lot of times, people want to jump the gun and go fishing for a lot of shit when oftentimes that's not there. And you may not even have a plan in place as to what it is that you're looking for. So just understand that it's okay to be wrong or. It's okay to just sit back and watch sometime, and most importantly, enjoy the game. But we've talked about some of the game top stars and their respective situations with the organizations whose uniforms they don, as well as share our thoughts on their given teams as well. But let's talk about a franchise that Timberwolves All-Star guard Anthony Edwards said there won't be any more nights off right after his majestic 41-point outing there a few weeks ago during opening night, and that's Portland. Well, the Trail Blazers entered the week with a 5-4 record, sitting atop the play-in portion of the standings in seventh place out west, with wins coming against some of the top contenders in the conference, such as the Lakers, Nuggets, and Thunder, as Portland recently overcame a 22-point deficit en route to becoming the first team to knock off the defending champs this year, marking the first victory that the Blazers earned against Oklahoma City since April 2021. With all of this coming about under interim head coach Tiago Splitter, who was thrust into the role hours following Chauncey Billups getting suddenly indicted on charges for his alleged involvement in an illegal gambling scheme just hours following their opening night affair against Minnesota. When I look at the way in which the Trailblazers have opened up the year, they're playing together as a collective. Drew Holiday, a guy who they drew criticism for trading for, has been everything and more for them, a huge godsend on both ends of the floor. You see him making impact plays down the stretch, not only defensively, but as well as offensively, playing that point guard role, setting guys up for shots, knocking down catch and shoot looks from beyond the arc. Denny Avdija has picked up right where he left off in the month of March. He's averaging over 25 a night. And over the last week or so has really put together an impressive stretch of basketball as Denny Avdija averaged 30.7 points, 9 boards, and 6.3 assists, and shot over 90% from the free throw line. And he's seen jumps in his free throw rate in each of the last 5 seasons from just 14 attempts per 100 shots from the field as a rookie in 2020-2021 to 49 per 100 this season. Tumani Kamara starting to come into his own as well. This is why I said that I could see Portland being a dark horse candidate to make some things interesting in Group C of the Western Conference for the NBA Cup. So I hope they continue to build off of what they displayed a season ago during the dog days of the year under Chauncey Billups. Tiago Splitter, his stoic demeanor, I say that much, has really benefited this group in a lot of ways. But I know nationally it's going to be a lot of conversations had as to whether or not he's truly the guy for the job with all that's unfolded. That's up for debate to me.
Well, look, I don't care if a guy is quote unquote stoic, smiling, laughing, yelling, whatever. Do the job. And right now, that's what he's doing, Tiago Splitter. He's doing a very solid job over there. One thing I noticed, Drew Holiday back playing point guard for real, averaging 8 assists so far this season, doing a good job of getting those younger guys involved. Like, hey, I ain't going to take the shots, but I can set you up. And Jeremy Grant coming off the bench this season.
Yeah.
I think that's been a very, very good move by that team. I kind of knocked you for your Portland take in Group C, and I'm going to continue to knock you for it.
That's
but
fine.
I must say, like you mentioned with Anthony Edwards, there isn't an off night playing this team anymore over there. Like, I'm actually pretty excited to see where this team is post All-Star, and definitely when Damian Lillard makes a return next year now. Like, I'm definitely excited to see how he blends with this young team.
And I'm glad you bring up the return of Damian Lillard when that comes about next season, because that's the thing that I really believe that they're missing right now is depth at the point guard position. Because Damian Lillard's down, Scoot Henderson is also down with a torn left hamstring injury. And he was a guy that really proved himself toward the back half of last year. It was one of the best backup point guards in the league. And I was really excited and eager to see him build off of what he displayed. But unfortunately, we haven't gotten a chance. And we may not get a chance to see him until once we get past the quarterway mark of the year. But they need him, especially with Blake Wesley going down, who they picked up after he got released. And I thought through the first several games of the year was very huge for them and their full court press attack, and was making some things happen attacking the rim. But after fracturing a bone in his right foot that's going to keep him out for an indefinite period of time, they've been decimated at that spot, and they needed Drew Holiday to be everything and more. You kind of see him looking like the Drew Holiday that he was during his early days with the Philadelphia 76ers a little bit, and that's been fun to watch. They got to get a point guard, and they got to find a way to close games in tight situations in which they're showing a resiliency to erase double-digit deficits, but they haven't been able to get the stops that they've needed, as each of their last five games entering the week, I believe, has been within 5 points in the last 5 minutes, and they've allowed 48 points on 41 clutch possessions over that stretch. So that's something they got to fix. But all in all, I like what I'm seeing from this group. I don't have high expectations. I just wanted to see if this could be a play-in team, and they're doing that right now. All right, so we've provided you with our thoughts on a young Blazers unit that entered the top of the week sitting a game above 500 and seventh in the West out in Rip City. Well, what about the team down in South Beach that recently knocked off Portland in a thrilling outing this past weekend in the Miami Heat, who sit at 7-4 through their first 11 games of the season and boast one of the NBA's top offenses during the early days of the year? Is Miami rising to week four sitting in second place in points per game with 124.1 points per outing, second in field goals made per game, fifth in field goal percentage, and ninth in three-point field goal percentage as of this recording? I think one of the biggest reasons why Miami's finding a lot of success in their new-look offense under Eric Spoelstra is due to the fact that they're playing read-and-react basketball. You can tell when you watch them that they're not really running too many set plays. They're just playing off a feel for one another. And they're prioritizing movement, which in turn is benefiting everybody. I also think that the reinforcements that they've gotten from their bench, specifically the resurgence of Jaime Jaquez Jr., has played a significant part in their success as well. They've almost been like 36 points per 100 possessions better with Jaquez on the floor than they've been with him on the bench. And last but not least, Norman Powell. Anybody that's listened to this show knows I'm one of his biggest fans. You're seeing him make a huge difference for this Miami club without Tyler Hero to start the year. Bam Adebayo has also been incredible as well. But since he hurt his toe, he's been out for the last few games. And all Norman Powell's continued to do is just put up 20 plus night after night, shooting the lights out the ball, getting to the free throw line at a career high clip, and showing that he is one of the more dynamic three-level scorers in the game today. And has really been a vital presence for the young guys on the team, such as Nikola Jovic, who scored a career-high 29 points alongside of 9 boards and 6 assists as a reserve in that win against Portland this past weekend.
Eric Spoelstra, that man, he does it year after year. Every year, I talk shit about the Miami Heat because they never get a superstar. And every year, Eric Spoelstra looks at the roster and figures it out. And this year came in different. We spoke about this in the offseason. They have 4 guys that could give you 20 points any night. One of them's out in Tyler Herro. You still have Norman Powell. You still have Bam. And you got Andrew Wiggins, who Spoelstra drew up a crazy lob play for to beat the Cavs with on Monday in that overtime game, 140 to 138. Another great game. You see plays like that, and then you take a closer look at their offense this season, right? You got Bam shooting more threes than ever in his career. He went from averaging 1 last year, he putting up 6 a game this year. You got Norm leading the team in scoring right now, 24 a game, but you still have Wiggins and Hawkins, who I didn't mention as part of that 4. They're both averaging 17 a game. And you got 9 guys overall averaging 9 points per game. Now, some of the things that they're doing goes kind of back to the pace and space days of the Heatles, spreading the floor out. Now, with Bron and D-Wade and Chris Bosh, they ran a lot of pick and roll. This iteration of the Heat, almost no pick and roll. That's not what this system is. Yeah, I took a deep dive into it, folks. No pick and rolls, no dribble handoffs, but simple principles like Gabe mentioned, read and react. 2 men in the corner at all times, dribbling the ball to the wing. The primary objective of the offense to create space, as Bam pointed out on NBA Amazon Prime.
Yeah, that was a great breakdown. I saw that.
No guys at the elbows. That's the corners right on the free throw line. No guys there. Why? Because we want open driving lanes at all times. We create isolation on the side of the ball and action on the opposite side. Now, if they have Michael Jordan in his prime, this is pretty much the triangle offense because it allowed Michael Jordan to play one-on-one and everybody else is moving around, keeping guys occupied on defense so he can continue to be one-on-one. Now, they don't have the dominant score to take full advantage of it, but it has paid off crazy so far this year. They lead the league in pace, they second in transition, and like you said, number one in scoring. Do I think this will maintain throughout the season? I do. Now, when the postseason comes, will this offense be as effective when the team has a time to sit down, watch film, and figure out what they can take away and what the Heat are trying to get to consistently? Yeah, I believe they might still have some struggles. But I don't think I had the Heat winning many games over there with 42, 43 wins. It's looking good. It's looking good for the Miami Heat this season. So shout out to Eric Spoelstra.
No doubt about it. And they continue to play at a fast pace. They averaging nearly 10 more possessions per 48 minutes than they did last season. And if they continue to keep that up, that would be the biggest season-to-season pace jump in the 30 years for which we've had play-by-play data, which began in the 96-97 season. They made an enormous jump in regards to their overall pace and play. And you're seeing it pay off, particularly in their NBA Cup outing and group play against Charlotte this past Friday, where they put up 53 points in the first quarter. And that was the second highest first quarter total in NBA history. And you see a lot of reports on Norman Powell and the way that he's played. But like you said, this is a team that has all 9 rotation players averaging at least 9 points over the 2 wins, right? And you can pretty much write in there for immediate starters when they're healthy, when Tyler Herro returns, and say it's him, Bam Adebayo, Norman Powell, and Andrew Wiggins. But with that fifth starter, to me, I think it could get a lot more interesting because on nights you want to go small, you could probably go with a Davion Mitchell. You want to go big, you could put a Kelle Ware in there, who had a double-double in that win against Cleveland at the top of this week. Nikola Jovic, a guy that I've always been intrigued by with his profile as a player. Can he continue to build off of his recent performance against Portland? If he can, that makes things even more intriguing. We talk about Jaime Jaquez Jr. Pelly Larson was somebody on the outside looking in when Tyler Hero was in the rotation. But ever since he got hurt, he's been getting extended opportunities, and he's made the most out of it with his off-ball play, defensive energy. You can't just have guys like that sitting on your bench with the way that they playing under Eric Spoelstra right now. I really like what I'm seeing from Miami. And we talk about the offense, but they're also managing to be a top five team in defensive rating through the early days of the year. So I don't know what their ceiling is. I still don't look at them as a championship contender, but I definitely like what I'm seeing right now. And I think that's a positive if you're a Heat fan.
Eric Spoelstra, man, just keeps continuing to do it.
Moving on from La Spoelstra Nostra to the event you heard us give our official thoughts and predictions on how things will shake out last week in the NBA Cup, where the majority of teams played their first game this past Friday, and we saw the Cavs draw even in Group A after knocking off the Wizards in D.C., in addition to the defending NBA Cup champion Bucks take care of business against the division rival Bulls on the Eastern Conference side of things in Group C, as last year's Cup runner-up in the Thunder would dispatch the Kings in their group play opener out in West Group A, while during the battle amongst Giants, we see Victor Wembanyama and the Spurs defeat Kevin Durant and last year's Cup semifinalists in the Rockets to go to 1-0 in Group C. Overall, when it came to last week's Cubs games, I really enjoyed watching the battle between Kevin Durant and Victor Wembanyama. You had the old head going against the young one, and both of them were taking on the challenge of guarding one another, and they were attacking one another. To me, that was the most impressive performance out of all the Cup games, and you could tell that it was a different level of energy in that I-10 rivalry showdown. I just enjoy that guys are taking these games seriously. You hear in the quotes that the Minnesota Timberwolves had out of their locker room following their win against the Utah Jazz, where you have Julius Randle openly saying, hey, we want to win the NBA Cup. You have Jay McDaniels saying, hey, we haven't been to Vegas. And you have Ant saying, hey, I don't understand it, but I do want to win. I think that represents the sentiment of a great deal of fans that are getting familiar with this event. I'm just enjoying the intensity of these games, and they feel as though they mean something greater. Even as a fan, just watching the Chicago Bulls go up against the Milwaukee Bucks, I talked about it last week how I would like to see the Bulls, following a strong start to the season, try and vie for an NBA Cup and use this event as a way to prove how legitimate they are to the rest of NBA fans. I like that it rallies fan bases and that it's rallying players the way that it is. And I'm eager to see a few games that are on the schedule this week, such as Philadelphia going into Detroit to take on the Red Hot Pistons, who recently knocked them off in a tight affair in the city of brotherly love. You got Tyrese Maxey going up against Cade Cunningham, a pair of Dallas-Fort Worth natives. Check that one out.
Definitely need that round two. Definitely need that round two. That last one, that was great. Games this week that I'm looking forward to from the NBA Cup in particular, Warriors Spurs on Friday. Hey, must win. Warriors, you'll be down 0-2. We talked about that group. Same group as well. Rockets Blazers on Friday. Houston Rockets, you could be down 0-2. Then we're looking at the Spurs and Blazers, two young teams being at the top of that group. And it goes back to something you were saying last week, that this NBA Cup is definitely an opportunity for these young teams to make a name for themselves, get big game experience. And in theory, it should be something that some of these veteran teams could lock their focus in and start to see what they're really made of early in the season. It's only four games, pretty much one a week. I think the intensity's been great. I think the league, you know, as time passes, I think it's really the group system that's throwing everything off. And like I said, last year, you have division trophies. Just force the division games into the month of November. Just make it, you know, an early season tournament. You win your division, you win that trophy, whatever is named, and have the knockout round. I get trying to balance it out and make it unique with the different groups. And I know that once the teams from Europe enter the NBA Cup, the group thing will make a little bit more sense. But until then, you have divisions for a reason. The Central Division is great. The Atlantic Division, Southwest Division is crazy. You already have great divisions with multiple great teams. Use them.
I don't mind the group structure. I wouldn't mind seeing the divisions, though, in a couple of years. like every 4 years, I wouldn't mind seeing something like that where you paired them up by division, because I think it would be a nice way to even enlighten some fans that aren't aware of the divisions that their teams happen to play in. But I will say this, the one thing I've had to pay attention to and I've become privy to this year with the Cup, as opposed to the first 2 years, is that point differential system. Every point literally matters because it could be the difference between you making it out of your group or even getting the lone wild card spot within your respective conference.
Yeah, the point differential thing, yeah, that's kind of cute. But when I speak about the division thing, not only making the NBA Cup easier to explain to not only players but fans, but I think it could be an opportunity to intensify some rivalries, allow fans to travel. Like, we in the Central Division. It takes nothing to get from Chicago to Indy, Chicago to Detroit, Chicago to
Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, Cleveland, Detroit to Cleveland. So same thing in a few other divisions. California is pretty much a division onto itself outside of the Phoenix Suns. I'm telling you, man, I think that knockout round is when this thing gonna really pick up. When you just look at the teams, the Raptors, the Pistons, the Spurs, Minnesota, OKC, they're in the same group and they're both still undefeated. Friday nights are gonna be a must-watch night during the month of November.
Yeah, and you talk about Minnesota and OKC getting off to strong starts. The Phoenix Suns are also 1-0 thus far. They've won five out of their last six outings alongside of Devin Booker and Dylan Brooks, who just recently returned to the fold alongside of Connor Gillespie, who's been a godsend for them off the bench. And then you have, like you say, Group C, San Antonio, Portland in the West. They're both 1-0. And then in Group B, you have the Pistons and the Magic. They're 1-0, and talk about that Detroit Philadelphia game, right? A rematch of the affair we saw on Sunday. If you're the Philadelphia 76ers, that's a game you have to have, because if you don't, you fall to 0-2, and they currently have a -1 point differential. So you don't want to be in that 0-2 hole, because once you get in that hole, like you say, Torrance, you're pretty much done with. So I'm just looking forward to watching these games in group play, seeing who comes out. And as you said, of course, it's always a different energy once you get to that knockout round, because then it's win or go home. But as those of you Hoop fans who listen to us each week know, there's always a nationally televised showdown that you can catch just about every night in the NBA, beginning with the Wednesday night doubleheader tilt that you can catch directly on the network known as the worldwide leader in sports, as the Orlando Magic will pull up the NYC and look to get back on track against the Knicks at Madison Square Garden starting at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central Time, followed by the battle between a pair of stars you heard us discuss in our Faces of the League series over the summer, is Luka Doncic guides the Los Angeles Lakers behind enemy lines to face the reigning MVP SGA and the defending champion Thunder in OKC in the nightcap affair, while Scottie Barnes and the Raptors make their voyage out to the land to take on Donovan Mitchell and the Cavs on Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central on NBA TV. Prior to NBA Cup action resuming back up the following night, like you heard us talk about, as the other squad out in the Sunshine State you just heard us discuss earlier, and the Miami Heat will also make their way to the Empire State to renew their rivalry with the Knicks at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, followed by Dub Spurs out in San Antonio as part of Amazon Prime's Friday night doubleheader. It's a lot of games this week that I am honestly looking forward to seeing. Of course, Orlando and New York is a game that I have tabbed. Just from the standpoint, the Magic have gotten off to a slow start. They've won four out of their last six games.
They
They've won,
suck. They
and
can't
maybe,
shoot.
yeah, I know. I've heard all the chatter, and I know they got to get that offense together. It's a work in progress, right? But they're 4-2 in their last six games. Desmond Bane just recently hit a big game winner against Portland, right? Just
Four
to kick
first
off
round
the week.
picks. Thank you.
I know. I know. However, can they keep it going against a New York Knicks squad who, as we know, has big aspirations trying to be a championship contender out of that Eastern Conference? I want to check that game out. I also want to check out the rematch between Cleveland and Miami on Wednesday night as well, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Central Time. Can the Cavs find a way to close out and defeat the team that they swept rather easily in the opening round of last year's playoffs. But as we talked about, has a new look offense and is leading the league in pace by a wide margin. And of course, Philadelphia, Detroit on Friday night in cup play. That's going to be a big one. And Sunday, Atlanta at Phoenix. Phoenix is, they have an easy schedule coming up with games, I believe, against Dallas and Indiana. They go into that game potentially 3-0 this week. Can they run off 4 wins in a row and continue their quest to silence a lot of their critics? They don't have too many high expectations, especially considering who they got rid of this offseason and Kevin Durant. However, you're seeing this team do some great things right now on the offensive end, ranking in the top 10 in both three-point percentage. And then you see Royce O'Neal and Grayson Allen shooting over 40% from three-point land on at least 63-point attempts. And we saw Grayson Allen knock down 10 en route to a 42-point outing against the New Orleans Pelicans. I know that may not be the most impressive thing, but I'm going to give Phoenix a little bit of credit, especially considering that they're doing this without Jalen Green, who unfortunately re-aggravated his hamstring injury. But even he had a stellar season debut, dropping 29 points against the LA Clippers. So I like what I'm seeing from him. Something about Dylan Brooks, man. Like I said, wherever he goes, leaves a winning impact all the time. Can they keep it up against a Hawks squad that's going to be looking to do battle without Trae Young and be relying on Kristaps Porzingis and Jalen Johnson to bring one home for him?
Yeah, I agree with the Hawks Suns on Sunday. I'm looking forward to that. Same with Cleveland and Miami, the rematch. After that great game you had Monday night, Evan Mobley, you let Khalil Ware treat you like that, like 20 rebounds, like, and you only had 21 points in an overtime game. Mitchell had to hit that three for y'all to stay in it. What more do you need, fam, to boss up? Anyway, Lakers-Bucks Saturday. I mean, that's still Giannis against Luka. I think those rosters are pretty even, too, when you look at them on paper. I think that should be fun. Milwaukee-Cleveland Monday night on Peacock. Looking forward to that one. See if Giannis can continue his dominance. See if Cleveland's ready to be taken serious. No one's taking them serious. Bulls-Pistons Wednesday. Now, the Bulls, y'all let Wemby do that to y'all. A lot of y'all hitting me up like, oh, we need a superstar. And what did I reply back to y'all? Trust in the new 24. We ain't going to let y'all down. Spurs-Warriors Wednesday as well, before their cup game Friday. The Warriors need to bounce back. They, like the Bulls, off to a great start, and now they're showing their true colors. You can't let Wemby do this to you 2 times in 1 week, especially if Steph comes back. You can't let that young team get this type of confidence against you. And D-Fox is back as well. Draymond, make a statement. So those are the games I'm looking forward to this week. I'm sure that these games won't necessarily be to the level that we got Monday night, but who knows? The season's been great so far.
Yeah, and you talk about that Bulls-Pistons game going down at LCA in downtown Detroit off Woodward Avenue. After the game Cade Cunningham had, that 40-10-10 triple-double performance, I'm definitely trying to see what's next. And yes, I know he shot 14 of 45 from the floor. I know that it's a lot of analysts and experts that want to dice it up and slice it up and say, well, it wasn't efficient. He did what he had to do to get the win. He was without Ausar Thompson. He was without Tobias Harris and several other key players on their team as well, such as Isaiah Stewart and Jaden Ivey. That was a game they really had no business losing or had no business even being that close, but it was. But nevertheless, they got the job done. Say earlier, enjoy the game.
Ladies and gentlemen, T.K. Cunningham, that's a franchise player. You stick beside him and great things happen.
Well, that's a wrap on this episode of the New 24. If you've enjoyed all that you've heard throughout the first 38 episodes, including this one, feel free to leave us a 5-star rating, letting us know what you love about it across the platforms you use to listen to all your favorite podcasts. If we can't thank you enough for all of your support, or just send us an email informing us of your thoughts, as Torrance said earlier, directly at tntfpod@gmail.com. Make sure to also give us a follow on the official social media platforms for the New 24 across Instagram and X at @tntf_ to make sure you don't miss any announcements as it pertains to future shows and episodes, including on all the latest currently trending around the NBA. Don't forget to subscribe to our RSS feed, where you can also check out our series such as Faces of the League on rss.com/podcast/TNTF. Definitely continue to stay in tune with us to get all you need, as we'll be back next week to continue keeping you tapped in. Once again, from myself, Gabriel Wilkins, and my co-host, Torrence Stagger, thanks for tuning in, as we hope that you enjoy the rest of your week. Be safe, and as always, peace.